Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program of news and features is designed for people learning English. So we speak slowly, using a simple style and a limited vocabulary. Today, we have reports from Jonathan Evans and John Russell. Gregory Stoffel brings us Ask a Teacher. And we close the program with an American story. This week, we hear The Lady in Black by Eleanor Porter. But first, here's John Russell.
Facebook recently said it was changing its policy on social media posts and Facebook groups linked to the conspiracy theory movement QAnon. The company has begun removing pages, groups, and Instagram accounts with ties to QAnon. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation lists the movement as a possible source of domestic terrorism. The driving force behind QAnon has yet to be identified by name. That person leaves posts on the internet and is nicknamed Q. He or she claims to have close ties to the administration of President Donald Trump. QAnon's main claim is that Trump is secretly leading a campaign against a large group of child sex traffickers. The group is said to include leading members of the Democratic Party and the movie industry. This is not the first time that Facebook has taken steps against QAnon. In August, it banned a third of QAnon groups for supporting violence. The company permitted most of the groups to continue using Facebook, although their posts appeared less often in news feeds. Instead of depending on user reports, Facebook will now treat QAnon like a militarized group, even if the posts do not have violent material. Facebook is seeking out and removing QAnon groups and pages, the company said in a blog post. Since August, some QAnon groups have added members. Others used special language to avoid being found. For example, some members use the word Q instead of the letter Q. Some QAnon supporters appear to have joined other groups, such as those concerned with child safety. And others have joined groups critical of restrictions on gatherings during the coronavirus health crisis. The Reuters news agency says that information comes from researchers at Facebook and elsewhere. While we've removed QAnon content that celebrates and supports violence, Facebook wrote, we've seen other QAnon content tied to different forms of real-world harm, including recent claims that the West Coast wildfires were started by certain groups. QAnon messaging changes very quickly, Facebook said. Recent QAnon posts have spread false information about voting and about COVID-19, researchers said. Other posts claimed that President Trump faked getting COVID-19 in order to plot secret arrests. Critics said Facebook's move was much needed, but possibly a little late. The conspiracy theory movement has already moved into U.S. politics. This year, several congressional candidates supported by the Republican Party, are QAnon friendly. Jonathan A. Greenblatt is head of the Anti-Defamation League and one of the founders of the Stop Hate for Profit campaign. The campaign organized a Facebook boycott by advertisers. Now that they have announced that they will treat the QAnon ideology like the very real threat that it is, we hope that they will follow up with some evidence showing how the ban is being enforced and whether it is fully effective, Greenblatt said. I'm John Russell.
The United Nations World Food Program won the Nobel Peace Prize on Friday. The Norwegian Nobel Committee is recognizing the group for its efforts to fight hunger and improve conditions for peace in areas affected by conflict. The World Food Program has long specialized in getting assistance to some of the world's most dangerous places. For example, the WFP has airdropped food in South Sudan and Syria. It also created an emergency service that kept aid flowing as COVID-19 restrictions grounded many flights. In 2019, the UN agency provided aid to almost 100 million people in 88 countries. Berit Riis-Andersen is the chair of the Norwegian Nobel Committee. She said on Friday, "With this year's award, the committee wishes to turn the eyes of the world to the millions of people who suffer from or face the threat of hunger." In announcing the award, the Nobel Committee noted that until the day we have a medical vaccine, food is the best vaccine against chaos. And it added, "There will be 265 million starving people within a year, so of course this is also a call to the international community not to underfund the World Food Program." Traveling in Niger, WFP Executive Director David Beasley credited the men and women of the WFP family. He said, "They are out there in the most difficult, complex places in the world, where there's war, conflict, climate extremes. They are out there, and they deserve this award." Beasley added, "This is the first time I've been speechless. This is unbelievable," he said. "And wow, 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 wow." In Geneva, a WFP spokesman told reporters, "When everything went into shutdown mode, the World Food Program was there. When everyone was leaving, the World Food Program had to provide the logistical support that the world deserved, that the world needed." Dan Smith is director of the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. He said, "The Nobel Committee had wanted to send a message of both hope and support for international cooperation. Hunger, like climate change, the pandemic, and other issues, is a world problem that can only be properly addressed through cooperation," he told Reuters news agency. The award comes with a gold medal and $1.1 million, a small amount compared to the money the WFP needs for its work. So far in 2020, the UN agency has received almost $6.4 billion in goods and other donations. more than a third, over $2.7 billion, comes from the United States. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Today, we answer a question from Livgeny, who was born in Ukraine. He writes, "Good day. I wonder how the usual American breakfasts go. What do Americans prefer to eat in the morning? Have a nice day." Dear Livgeny, thank you for writing to us. The United States has a rich culture when it comes to the morning meal. Let us explore what Americans have for breakfast. During the work week, many Americans have a light breakfast. In fact, nearly 40% will not have anything at all. Americans usually save larger breakfasts for the weekend when they have more time in the morning to cook. The most popular breakfast food is eggs. Americans prepare eggs in many ways. Most people have a preference for how they are cooked. Some Americans eat their eggs with bacon or sausage, meat products that often come from pigs. Another popular breakfast food is cereal, a product manufactured from processed cereal grains. It is usually eaten with milk poured over it. Another favorite is hot coffee. Many people have this with a bagel or a donut. A bagel is a baked good made in the shape of a circle or ring. It is heated until the bread is somewhat hard on the outside, but soft on the inside. Donuts, like bagels, are ring-shaped, but they are cooked in oil and have a sweet taste. The United States is culturally diverse, and you can find so many kinds of food. So, while eggs and meat are popular, millions of Americans eat other things for breakfast. On weekends, people have more time to cook and eat. Many Americans may enjoy a meal we call brunch on a weekend day. That word combines breakfast and lunch, the term for a midday meal. Brunch is usually a larger meal than the weekday breakfast. Americans have coffee, fruit juice, and sometimes even alcoholic drinks with brunch. Popular foods include waffles and pancakes, two kinds of cake. French toast is also popular. It is made from bread combined with a sweet, milky egg mixture, which is then cooked. I hope that helps to answer your question, Livgeny. And that's Ask a Teacher. What questions do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm Gregory Stockel.
Now, the VOA program, American Stories. Our story today is called The Lady in Black. It was written by Eleanor H. Porter. Here is Faith Lapidus with the story.
The house was very still. In the little room over the porch, the lady in black sat alone. Near her, a child's white dress lay across a chair. On the floor at her feet lay a tiny pair of shoes. A doll hung over a chair, and a toy soldier occupied the little stand by the bed. And everywhere was silence. The strange silence that comes only to a room where the clock has stopped ticking. The clock stood on the shelf near the end of the bed. The lady in black looked at it. She remembered the wave of anger that had come over her when she had reached out her hand and silenced the clock that night 3 months before. It had been silent ever since, and it should remain silent, too. Of what possible use were the hours it would tick away now? As if anything mattered, with little Kathleen lying out there white and still under the black earth.
Mother!
The lady in black moved restlessly and looked toward the closed door. Behind it, she knew, was a little boy with wide blue eyes who wanted her. But she wished he would not call her by that name. It only reminded her of those other little lips, silent now.
Mother!
The voice was more demanding. The lady in black did not answer. He might go away, she thought, if she did not answer. There was a short silence, and then the door opened slowly.
Peek!
It was a cry of joyful discovery, but it was followed almost immediately by silence. The unsmiling woman did not invite him to come near. The boy was unsteady at his first step. He paused, then spoke carefully.
Eyes here?
It was maybe the worst thing he could have said. To the lady in black, it was a yet more painful reminder of that other one who was not there. She gave a sharp cry and covered her face with her hands.
Bobby! Bobby!
She cried out in a release of unreasoning sadness.
Go away! Go away! I want to be alone! Alone!
All the brightness fled from the boy's face. His eyes showed a feeling of deep hurt. He waited, but she did not move. Then, with a half-quieted cry, he left the room. Long minutes afterward, the lady in black raised her head and saw him through the window. He was in the yard with his father, playing under the apple tree.
Playing!
The lady in black looked at them with serious eyes, and her mouth hardened at the corners. Bobby had someone to play with him, someone to love him and care for him, while out there on the hillside, Kathleen was alone. All alone. With a little cry, the lady in black sprang to her feet and hurried into her own room. Her hands shook as she pinned on her hat and covered herself with her black veil. But her step was firm as she walked downstairs and out through the hall. The man under the apple tree rose hurriedly and came forward. "Helen, dearest, not again today," he begged. "Darling, it can't do any good."
"But she's alone, all alone. You don't seem to think. No one thinks. No one knows how I feel. You don't understand. If you did, you'd come with me. You wouldn't ask me to stay here," choked the woman.
I have been with you, dear, said the man gently. I've been with you today and every day, almost since she left us. But it can't do any good, this continuous mourning over her grave. It only makes more sadness for you, for me, and for Bobby. Bobby is here, you know, dear. No, no, don't say it, cried the woman wildly. You don't understand. You don't understand. And she turned and hurried away, followed by the worried eyes of the man and the sad eyes of the boy. It was not a long walk to the burial place. The lady in black knew the way, yet she stumbled and reached out blindly. She fell before a little stone marked Kathleen. Near her, a gray-haired woman, with her hands full of pink and white roses, watched her sympathetically. The gray-haired woman paused and opened her lips as if she would speak. Then she turned slowly and began to arrange her flowers on a grave nearby. The lady in black raised her head. For a time she watched in silence. Then she threw back her veil and spoke. "You care, too," she said softly. "You understand. I've seen you here before, I'm sure. And was yours a little girl?" The gray-haired woman shook her head. "No, dearie, it's a little boy. Or he was a little boy 40 years ago."
40 years? So long. How could you have lived 40 years without him?"
Again the little woman shook her head. "One has to sometimes, dearie. But this little boy wasn't mine."
"But you care. You understand. I've seen you here so often before."
"Yes. You see, there's no one else to care. But there was once, and I'm caring now for her sake."
"For her?"
"His mother."
"Oh." It was a tender little cry, full of quick sympathy.
The eyes of the lady in black were on the stone marked Kathleen.
"It ain't as if I didn't know how she'd feel," said the gray-haired woman. "You see, I was nurse to the boy when it happened, and for years afterward I worked in the family, so I know. I saw the whole thing from the beginning, from the very day when the little boy here met with the accident."
"Accident?" It was a cry of concern and sympathy from Kathleen's mother.
"Yes, it was a runaway, and he didn't live 2 days.
I know, choked the lady in black. Yet she was not thinking of the boy and the runaway horse accident.
"Things stopped then for my mistress, and that was the beginning of the end. She had a husband and a daughter, but they didn't seem to be important, not either of them. Nothing seemed important except this little grave out here. She came and spent hours over it, bringing flowers and talking to it."
The lady in black raised her head suddenly and quickly looked into the woman's face. The woman went on speaking.
"The house got sadder and sadder. She didn't seem to mind. She seemed to want it so. She shut out the sunshine and put away many of the pictures. She sat only in the boy's room, and there, everything was just as it was when he left it. She wouldn't let a thing be touched. I wondered afterward that she didn't see where it was all leading to. But she didn't."
"Leading to?" The voice shook.
Yeah, I wondered she didn't see she was losing them, that husband and daughter. But she didn't see it.
The lady in black sat very still. Even the birds seemed to have stopped their singing. Then the gray-haired woman spoke.
So, you see, that's why I come and put flowers here. It's for her. There's no one else now to care, she sighed, rising to her feet.
But you haven't told yet what happened, said the lady in black softly.
Oh, I don't know myself, really. I know the man went away. He got something to do traveling, so he wasn't home much. When he did come, he looked sick and bad. He come less and less, and he died. But that was after she died. He's buried over there beside her and the boy. The girl, well, nobody knows where the girl is. Girls like flowers and sunshine and laughter and young people, you know? And she didn't get any of them at home. So she went where she did get them, I suppose. There, and if I haven't gone and tired you all out with my talking, said the little gray-haired woman regretfully.
No, no, I was glad to hear it, said the lady in black, rising unsteadily to her feet. Her face had grown white, and her eyes showed a sudden fear.
But I must go now. Thank you.
And she turned and hurried away. The house was very still when the lady in black reached home. She shivered at its silence. She hurried up the stairs, almost with guilt. In her own room, she pulled at the dark veil that covered her face. She was crying now, a choking little cry with broken words running through it. She was still crying as she removed her black dress. Long minutes later, the lady, in black no longer, moved slowly down the stairway. Her eyes showed traces of tears, but her lips were bravely curved in a smile. She wore a white dress and a single white rose in her hair. Behind her, in the little room over the porch, a tiny clock ticked loudly on its shelf near the end of the bed. There came a sound of running feet in the hall below, then,
"Mother! It's Mother! Come back!"
shouted a happy voice. And with a little sobbing cry, Bobby's mother opened her arms to her son.
The Lady in Black was written by Eleanor H. Porter. It was adapted by LaJuan Davis, who was also the producer. The storyteller was Faith Lapidus. I'm Bob Doty.
And that's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Katie Weaver.